Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 352 for comics originally released on May 7th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC's New 52 Futures End number 1. This is actually the second issue of the series because, of course, the Zero issue came out on Free Comic Book Day, and I held off reading it. I mean, I held off all of a couple of days. It wasn't that big of a sacrifice, so I could read it right before reading this issue. You read the Zero issue too, also?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I have it. I didn't read it.
Great. That'll give us a very different vantage point on this. I'm curious because I thought the Zero issue kicked off the story a lot better than the first issue did. And I think, well, you can kind of piece things together without it. This first issue didn't really, you know, kick off the story the way I felt a first issue ought to. I mean, since you didn't read the Zero issue and it was your first issue, what were your thoughts on that?
Now that you mention it, I really should have read that. For some reason, when I'm out there acquiring my free comics on Free Comic Book Day, I don't think of them as being not also available in stores, you know, mm-hmm. that it's actually prequel stuff. I was assuming that it was just a snapshot of this issue. And
no.
that was the wrong thing to think. So, there's some good stuff in here,
mm-hmm.
but I bet you a Zero issue would have helped me a lot.
Why did you think that, given the last couple of years when they did the Blackest Night Zero? I mean, for the last, maybe not last year, but most of the previous years, they've been using new Free Comic Book Day to kick off some of their event stuff.
Maybe I'm just not that smart, John.
I wasn't going to say that.
I don't know. Jeez, it's a really big misstep on my part.
It happens. I mean, the bottom line is they should have made that clearer, that it wasn't just, I mean, it's labeled as a special edition, but it should be the story starts here. You know, they did that better in some past years in terms of how they positioned that. How accessible did you feel this was in terms of a first issue then? I mean, where were you confused and where did you think it was lacking, or did you really love it and I'm totally off base here?
There was a lot of stuff happened here. I hope you're not attached to some of these characters because they don't, you know, they may not make it through this issue. So there was some crazy stuff happening. I'm not 100%. In fact, I don't read Batman Beyond. So that was my introduction to him. I hadn't read Stormwatch. So that was my introduction to that group.
Okay.
I think that's my first, Firestorm iteration of that character.
All right.
Since way back. That Hawkman I didn't recognize, but, you know, I'm not sure what era he's from.
He had a series in the New 52.
So, like, Green Arrow was one of the few characters that I, you know, recognized easily, maybe one or two others.
How about Grifter?
No, he was new to me.
Okay, how about the mermaid from that was hanging around with Stormwatch here?
No idea.
Okay, she was from the Frankenstein series. It's interesting how many characters they featured here that were from defunct titles. And I think that was not a bad move, as it really gave them a lot of freedom as to what to do with some of those characters.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool. It felt like an Injustice story, kind of, to me, because of the out-of-sync things that were going on, and I see this is a future issue. Did it say just 5 years in the future?
Yes, this takes place 5 years from now.
It feels much further in the future than that to me as I'm reading it. But
that's kind of a funny comment if you read the Zero issue.
Okay.
Because
once again, I made a horrible blunder and did not do that.
The Zero issue sets up this story, and while it's a prequel issue in some respects to this, it also takes place after this.
Is the Zero issue available digitally free for people that didn't go out Free Comic Book Day? Are you just out of luck?
That's an excellent question. I would hope it is, but I don't know that for certain. DCBS lets everyone order 5 free comic book day issues.
Yeah.
And since I can't always guarantee I'm going to have the time to make it out and stuff, I always make sure the 5 I absolutely positively want to have are on that list. And I'm glad I did that this year because I didn't make it to any stores. So I made sure Future's End was one of those.
Yeah, I think I did the same. I did Future's End, Rocket Raccoon. There was another DC book, I think.
I did not do Rocket Raccoon. I probably should have. I did the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Armor Hunters, yep. Atomic Robo, and the Valiant Handbook.
I did the Archaea hardcover and the Guardians of the Galaxy. So the ones I thought might be in short supply, but it turns out they weren't that day. Anyway, back to this. Art was really pretty. The story. I mean, I could follow it. I'm not sure, which maybe you got that clue in the Zero issue, but I'm not sure what we're going to be doing going forward. I'm not sure what the big picture of this weekly series is. In Batman Eternal, I know that we're going to spend some time getting Jim Gordon out of jail and finding out who framed him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that. I don't really know what the main deal is with Future's End.
It was in this issue, but it was something that was easy to miss if you hadn't read the Zero issue. It was really hammered home in the Zero issue, though. So, to me, that's a little bit of a failing of this first issue, because it should have been crystal clear, even if you missed the Zero issue, as to what's going on here.
I think the lesson here, folks, is read the Zero issue first, and if you don't have that Zero issue, try to get it.
Well, again, hopefully it's on like Comixology or something like that for free. If not, they've missed the boat. Frankly, I thought the Zero issue was the better issue. There was one or two things I thought were just kind of ironic about it, but it set the story up. It really had some good character moments and, frankly, held together, I think, a lot better than this did. This seemed to be more of a let's pull in various characters that no longer have their own books and play with them for a little bit. And it's like, since it's all 5 years from now, let's kind of just jump some stuff forward, change the status quo thing. And I'm a little unhappy with that storytelling technique of let's jump forward in time just so we can arbitrarily change the status quo without having to tell stories to change the status quo. The whole point of any good story is to change the life of the character in some way, shape, or form. Maybe profoundly, maybe not so profoundly, but to have things happen that matter to the character. And for them to routinely over at DC skip over that and say, well, what if we had just, you know, set things up differently? I mean, they've done that here. They did that with the 1 year later jump. They did that with the New 52. They did that with Flashpoint. I'm sure if I were to think about it, I could come up with a couple of other instances in which they basically, you know, reset the chessboard, if you will, for the characters, just to give them a fresh starting point for stories. I think that's a somewhat cheap and lazy way to tell stories.
And it has been a struggle for me with the New 52 since its launch, this whole it's a 5 year window and trying to get some of the canonical things to still line up in that 5 year window.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some leaps of faith and some suspension of disbelief you really have to take there to make that work. And that, you know, I struggle with that sometimes. So then now to take another 5 year leap and say, now we're going to do all this crazy stuff. And there's a lot of crazy stuff in here to me, in this issue. And it's only 5 years in the future. It's really, really crazy. And so in a 10 year span, we're basically frozen in time with our storytelling. It feels like what DC is doing is they're freezing us in time in this very small, tight window, and everything takes place in this very short amount of time, and it doesn't really make sense to me. But
well, it's even more ironic when you consider the fact that the New 52's only been around for, what, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
So they're having to jump twice the length of how long it's been around forward just to give a new starting point after having a new starting point. It is a little hard to kind of wrap your mind around and justify to a degree. One thing I do want to clarify about Batman Beyond, I believe the New 52 Future's End is his first appearance in the canonical DC universe in any way, shape, or form. In other words, the Batman Beyond series that's going on is part of the kids line that's based on the animated series continuity, not the New 52 continuity.
Mm.
But, I mean, he's a cool character, so bringing him in makes sense. But this was one where I'm glad it's a weekly series, because that means the story is going to move along faster, and hopefully that'll keep the story momentum going. I think if I had read this issue and had to wait a month for the next, that wouldn't work so well for me.
No. And then I can't help but compare this to the other weekly, the Batman Eternal, and you know, I'm 5 issues into that and loving it more and more as each issue comes out. And I think part of that is probably because of my familiarity with, you know, the subject matter. I'm already in the bag for Batman anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's probably not a fair apples to apples comparison. But well, this has a little ways to go to get that momentum for me.
It's a comparison, though, people are going to make. You know, there are multiple weekly series going on at DC, and that's going to stretch some people's budgets, and they're going to have to pick. And I think, like you said, Batman Eternal, the Batman family of characters, easy sell for a lot of people. They're more familiar with those characters. Whereas here, again, most of the ones we got have already lost a title. That gives them a little bit of a taint of, well, are they losers or not? And frankly, the creators they have on here, Brian Azzarello, Keith Giffen, Dan Jurgens, Jeff Lemire, good creators, no question about that. But I think they've put some of their top guns over on Batman Eternal. So that, I think, gives that an edge right there. And, you know, it's 5 issues in versus this is the first issue of Future's End. You know, a month from now, maybe you'll feel differently. Maybe you won't. If I had to guess, I'm suspecting Batman Eternal is just going to continue to have that much more story momentum and resonance with most people, not just you. So it'll be interesting to see how this fares.
Well, I'm definitely going to give this 4 weeks to sell me. I'm going to give it the full month of weekly issues to win me over or not. So it has a little bit more time. Well, plus a zero issue. I'll probably go back and read that now. So.
Definitely read the zero issue. I thought that was the better issue. It set the stuff up really well. It was much more kind of action-packed and clearly set what I think is the narrative trajectory for this series, whereas in the first issue, if you knew that from kind of the premise and the way they pitched the series, great. If not, it's like, well, it's in there, but kind of hidden, which is surprising to me and disappointing. And for me, this was one that was right there on the, do I give it a 3, give it a 4? It was a little bit of a toss-up, but I'm going to go with a 3 because it had some shortcomings. It wasn't good enough to get that 4, although it was at least under consideration for it.
Yeah, it was a high 3 for me. I feel bad now that I did not do the official homework for it, that I didn't get the memo on that I needed that zero issue. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that did not do that either.
I'm glad you didn't, because that way we came at it from different perspectives. I think that's great.
But yeah, I don't think this is as strong a debut as Batman, but it could be the subject matter familiarity for me. I'm hoping it builds on builds in momentum as it goes along. But this is an okay comic, leaning towards good, somewhere in there. And I hope folks have probably most likely have pre-ordered the whole month. And so they're probably all in for 3 or 4 issues anyway. So I think they're like me. It'll take a little while to have a final verdict on this.
Yeah. Well, and again, read the zero issue, because for me, that was a 4 out of 5. It was a much better issue. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Original Sin number 1. So once again, we're doing a kind of an event book for a major publisher. This, too, had a zero issue. This was a $4.99 comic, because it's not weekly. Therefore, they can charge the big bucks for it. It does have a higher page count, but I kind of knew from the first page where we got kind of the roll call of characters, that kind of made me a little wary of this issue. Not in a bad way, but there was an obvious, I thought, glaring omission. Nova wasn't listed. And that was the character that really made the zero issue so terrific. And not seeing him here kind of worried me. Then I read the issue. And it had some really cool moments. We got some good establishing stuff, if you're not familiar with who the Watcher is and stuff like that. We get this great scene with a Quinjet or whatever, parked outside a steakhouse or whatever, which is just kind of funny. And then the story kind of, you know, kicks into gear and stuff. And while it had its moments, a lot of this felt like setup. Like, let's just randomly shuffle some characters together that normally wouldn't interact, see how that goes. And there were one or two places where it just took me out of the story. And the two main things that kind of did that was, at one point, we've got the Ultimate Nullifier. This has been around in the Marvel Universe for decades. It's the thing even Galactus is afraid of. And Spider-Man's like, well, what the hell is that, you know? And I'm like, how does Spider-Man not know what the Ultimate Nullifier is? Of course, that was quickly changed in my mind to, how does Jason Aaron, the writer of the issue, not know what the Ultimate Nullifier is? Because it gets used incorrectly. Or at least the way it had been built up must have been wildly mistaken. That sort of continuity thing, particularly in an event title, really rubs me the wrong way. And then this whole thing is a murder mystery around the Watcher being killed. I mean, we've known this. They've been building this up for months. Yet it comes across, and hopefully you'll have a different opinion on this. It comes across as just, yep, some guy got murdered. You know? Oh, it was the Watcher. Gee, what a shame. There was no... It felt so impersonal. There was no connection to it for any of the characters. And after such a character-driven zero issue with Nova and the Watcher interacting and all that wonderful stuff, this just left me kind of cold. Did you feel that way, or
I did, and the problem is I read the zero issue this time, and paid for the privilege to read that zero issue, and it was so full of heart mm-hmm. and emotion, and I cared about the Watcher, and so I care more about this Watcher dying in issue one than anybody else in here does, and they're noticeably cold about it, and I don't know why that is. And I'm hoping it's because they're going to bring Nova in the next issue and have him be our heart and emotions connected to this loss.
I hope
because
so.
They're treating him very callously, the body very callously. The whole crime is just it's not my turn to deal with this stuff. You do it. It's like a hot potato that nobody wants to deal with. And these characters are not endearing themselves to me in this book. And
it read like a bad episode of CSI.
Yeah.
Huh. The guy's dead. Well, geez, go figure. Oh, they scooped his eyes out. Don't see that very often. And just kind of like it's just a matter of fact. Huh? Like they're just so blasé about this.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting they should be breaking down in tears or something. But, I mean, they don't even seem to be duly impressed and, I don't know, scared. Here's a guy whose job in the galaxy is to watch everything, and presumably he didn't see this coming. He's dead? That's a pretty impressive crime. And they're like, oh, well, we should go interview somebody, I guess. Go canvass the neighborhood.
Plus all the stuff that he has been stashing and guarding, that's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we might need to look into that. They're more concerned with that a little bit than him actually dying. And then the thing with the Nullifier, it caught me off guard, too, because I don't know that much about the Nullifier, but I have seen something in some old issues of Nova where it was not used that way.
Well, the whole thing is, if you use it, it like ultimately nullifies its target, and if you're not careful, you as well as the carrier of the weapon. And there was parts left over, if you know what I mean.
It's not a cap gun.
I don't know. It should have had the mushroom cloud. I certainly don't think it should have had any survivable remains of the victim. And to me, is that a catastrophic, you know, Achilles heel of the issue? No, but it lowers my opinion of the writer to a degree. But I mean, in fairness, there's a ton of continuity they can't be expected to know at all. But you know, Tom Brevoort edited this, and he's supposed to be a really knowledgeable guy about the Marvel Universe. This got past him.
The writer might not have to know all that stuff, but somebody does.
It's a 2-minute search on Google if you're slow at typing. I know because I double checked. It's like this shouldn't work this way, should it? Anyways, this was one of those where they spent so much time just mixing up characters and, hey, what about this? And starting different plot lines to go run through different things that I felt a lot started to happen in this issue, but without enough context or completion or caring, really, for me to connect to it. And this isn't a bad issue. It's just not the really strong launch of an event series that I was wanting and frankly expecting out of Marvel.
Yeah, it's very similar to the last book for me. It's right on that 3-4 line, and where the zero issue for me was a 5. If we were reviewing that one last week or 2 weeks ago, this one, you know, I hate to compare the two, but this does not measure up to that zero issue as far as, especially in the heart department.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to go with another high 3, and but I am going to stick around and give it a chance to get a little sentimental, maybe.
That was very much how I felt. I think I would have liked this issue better had I not read the zero issue. Mark Waid knocked it out of the park with that, and I think when we talked last week, I'd given it a 4, and I'm debating if I want to go back and kind of adjust that in my scorecard or whatever I keep to a 5, because it was a phenomenal issue. And certainly, in comparison to this issue, made me appreciate the zero issue all the more.
Yeah.
And it's hard to look at that story with all the heart and soul and character aspects there, and this, which was so plot-driven, so impersonal, yeah, crime procedural.
But the reason why it could be a low 4 is a lot of the character stuff. The interplay in that diner was great. That, you know, the story, the Nick Fury story was great. I mean, I love that part. And there was some stuff with these character pairings and them going back and forth that was cool and well done. And so there's a lot of good stuff in here. But when you compare it to that zero issue, it pales.
Well, I mean, there's certainly nothing horrible about this, but it failed to, for me, significantly break out of the average to that 4. It was moving in that direction, certainly, but given the page count it had, the characters it had, the potential it had, I felt a lot of that was unrealized.
Yeah.
And maybe they shouldn't have started so many plot threads in this issue, but given us a little bit more, why is this a big deal, other than telling us it's a big deal? Why should we worry about all those weapons, other than it's obviously going to inconvenience the heroes for a little bit? You know, it's, I can't help but think if Mark Waid had written this in addition to the zero issue, we'd be reading a fundamentally different take on the same events.
Is it possible we won't get any Nova, too? I mean, that is a possibility.
I'm pretty sure he's going to show up later in this. If he does not, I'll be very disappointed, because the Watcher has been a recurring regular cast member over in the Nova series. So to not include Nova doesn't make sense to me.
Right. I mean, I'm very hopeful that he is included, but I'm not. I haven't looked ahead in the solicits enough to know.
I would be seriously disappointed if he doesn't come into play. So yeah, 3 out of 5 for me. I'm obviously going to stick with it. It's a Marvel event. It's not a bad read. It just, again, fell flat.
Yeah, I'm in that high 3 as well, and I'm also going to stick with the event, but I'm going to sit out the crossovers unless I'm already reading that book.
All of which there are plenty of crossovers, too. Jeez.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Critter number 20 from Big Dog Inc. Now, I have been a fan of this series since it started. I think it's a good kind of fun superhero title, bit of a, I guess, lighthearted, almost 1980s kind of a vibe to it in my mind. It's not a comedy or poking fun at superheroes, but it also doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's about, I don't know, heroes fighting crime and stuff, which is so rare these days in a lot of cases. This was a $1 jumping on point. It was late and resolicited, which is unfortunate, but it happens. I thought it did a pretty good job of being accessible, but again, it's preaching to the choir for me. I've been involved with this since it began as a reader. How about you? Was this your first introduction to the character?
Yeah, I've been hearing about this for a while. My buddy Bob is a big fan of Critter, and he really likes the whole publisher.
Big Dog Inc.
Yeah, he's seen them at shows and talked to the guys and said they're really great people. So he's a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had that goodwill built in but this is the first I've ever read anything.
Yeah. I talked with Tom Hutchinson, the lead guy and head writer and stuff over there at C2E2. I've talked with him a bit in the past at other shows, San Diego and such. They've been around 5 years, and they're one that I really don't think they get as much respect and kind of credit as I think they're due. between this title, Penny for Your Soul, the other stuff they're doing, they're a really strong publisher that's really underrated and is flying beneath too many people's radar. Now, this is one that picks up from recent events, but again, I thought they did a pretty good job being accessible. Were you able to follow the story, and did you care about the characters?
Yeah, they did a good job of bringing me up to speed on who Critter is, kind of what her deal is, what makes her tick, and you know, her supporting cast. They did a good job of introducing me to those. At some places, the art, I had trouble telling the characters apart, unless really? I could see her ears. You know, some of the women, the females look very similar.
Particularly when two of them have the same kind of odd, like purplish hair color.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, besides that, it did a really good job of bringing me up to speed and let me enjoy this book. And it was fun. It was more like lighthearted superhero adventuring. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really good comic. I enjoyed it.
Well, I liked just some of the character moments they had when one of the superheroines is, you know, falling from a building or whatever and gets rescued by one of the other characters. I'm a little unclear if his name's F-14 or Tomcat or both. Just the interplay between those two is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, there are a number of these characters that are kind of the familiar, iconic archetypes, but there are also quite a few that are fairly unique and don't feel like just, you know, oh, I've seen this sort of character before. It's a good blend of those. And I think they've really built up kind of a solid, fun superhero universe over here at Big Dog Inc., both in this title, and they've had a few other kind of one-shots and miniseries around this group of characters.
Yeah, there's a couple things in here where there was some alternate views of the same scene, and I'm assuming that's going to play out down the road and not something I needed to know coming in. I'm hoping that's the way that is. There was a few things like that that did confuse me a little bit, but that's okay. It's part of the mystery going forward in the story arc. But I think this did a good job of setting the table for a buck, I might add, you know?
Yeah.
And here's a little taste of this character, her supporting cast, what, you know, some action stuff going on here, and it gave you everything you need to know whether this is something for you or not. And you know, I was really happy with it as an intro issue.
Good, that's good to hear. This is the sort of thing that I don't think is for everybody. I mean, what comic is? I think if you lean like in the Vertigo direction or want more grim and gritty with your superheroes, this isn't that. But it is what it is. It's true to itself, and I think it's, again, as a fun, lighthearted, heroic superhero title, I'm really loving it. The whole bit with the different, you know, views or takes or whatever on the character of Critter that we see in a few pages is part of the bigger storyline at work. And I felt it fit in here well enough. If you don't have that, you're not confused or whatever. But if you do know the backstory on some of the stuff, it's really building up that kind of subplot of the character. And it is related to one of the other characters. But I'm curious when and where that'll kind of really come into full play and where it goes. So I'm a big fan of this stuff. I think Big Dog Inc. is doing a lot of really good books. And I think more people should check their stuff out. They're a publisher where I give I go through their section of previews very closely every month. I don't get everything. They've got one or two more kind of like a horror type book or whatever that I haven't checked out yet. But this, Penny for Your Soul, the Legends of Oz and the Wicked West and stuff, I'm big fans of all of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's a breezy read. I don't know if they're all about the same length or not, but this issue was a quick read. And I think the big two could take a lesson here. This is how you maybe add a little juice to your comic line. If sales are sagging or you think it deserves a wider audience or you're doing something, you know, why don't you sell the book for a buck, make it very accessible. You know, market it that way within the numbering sequence that you have the issue anyway. Why do you have to stop things and artificially inflate with marketing shenanigans when you can do something like this it breeds goodwill with the readers, and people are much more likely to try a dollar comic to check it out. I mean, if they did this for Mark Waid for Daredevil 37 instead of relaunching it, that would have been great.
Yeah.
You know, and then continued that way. Same with Wolverine and some of those others that they rebooted for no reason at all. This is the model that I would prefer. I like this idea.
I think this is much better than the relaunches. And I'm going to use the word relaunches versus reboot, because reboot implies a continuity thing in my mind, at least. You know me and the terminology. I'm such a
pain. You and your wordsmithing.
I know. But in addition to the way they packaged this with the continued numbering, the lower price, I think the real success of this issue is the content and the focus on accessibility. Because in many of those cases with the renumbering, I think Wolverine's probably the best example. It's not a number one. It's not accessible. It's not introducing you to the characters and such. It wouldn't have worked as a dollar issue particularly well. Whereas this, you're introduced to the character, the cast, the status quo, what's going on, the tone, the style, the feel. Like you said, you know, you have everything you need to know to determine, is this book for you or not?
And I like what they did. They kind of pinned this issue on this main character. They kind of kept everybody else on the sidelines, introduced you to them. But they're saying, here's the heart and soul of this book. If you like her, and we think you do, you will, then you'll stick around. And they're, you know, they gave you a lot of her on screen, on page, and built her character up, and introduced you and fleshed that character out, and made you either like her or not like her. And I think that's smart.
Yeah, they did great stuff here. For me, this was a very solid 4 out of 5 book.
Yeah, it's a 4 out of 5 for me, and I'm going to continue this book going forward. So hats off to you, Big Dog Inc. You've got me. This is my first book from you that I'm reading.
If you are into the either Western genre and want an interesting story, or into the Oz stuff, The Legend of Oz and the Wicked West is a fun read. I'm not real big on either Oz or Westerns, but it's a really fun blend. Kind of.
I do like Jonah. I do like All-Star Western in DC. Is it similar?
Not really. I mean, it's in a Western thing, but it's also the whole, you know, Oz stuff and that aspect of it. I'm trying to think what would be a good comparison property. It's got a little bit of the Once Upon a Time Fables-ish kind of feel to it, because again, it's dealing with Oz and all that stuff. But again, as a Western.
Are these guys doing Scheherazade as well?
They're doing that, which I'm really enjoying. That's definitely worth checking out. The other one that I think is one of their kind of key titles is Penny for Your Soul. Okay. And the premise of that original miniseries, and they've done a few follow-ons such that continued the story. There's a casino in Las Vegas, and its shtick is basically you go there, you sign a contract, they'll give you $10,000 for your soul. Gamble it, use it for the shows, whatever. Just have a great time. Most people are like, okay, this is hilarious, this is funny. If they're going to give me $10,000, I'll take it. The thing is, it's a real deal. You have signed away your soul, and they will collect. And it's a battle between heaven and hell. In particularly the early stuff, there's a lot of the religious overtones and stuff like that. I mean, it's obviously still there, but I found that whole property to be a really fun, not comparative religion kind of a thing, but a fun narrative story take on religion and would you sell your soul? Is that the right thing to do? Is it the wrong? It was and continues to be fun. And the Joan of Arc series is kind of spinning out of that stuff they're doing.
How far in is the Penny for Your Soul book?
It is a series of miniseries, and I think they're on their third or fourth.
Okay.
If you can find the trade for the first one, that's probably where I'd suggest starting, just to get the starting, you know, of the story. But I tend to like to start at the beginning myself. I'm just crazy that way.
Yeah, and I don't even read Zero issues, so you know me.
Yeah, that's just insane. Well, speaking of not reading things, we're recording this a little early, so I have only read some of what I've gotten this week. And it's interesting because there were quite a few that I thought were really good. Another issue of Alex and Ada that was great. I really liked the second issue of Aquaman and the Others. Archer and Armstrong's always good. Batman Eternal continues, like you said earlier, to be a great read. Superman and Batman number 10, that was a really fun issue. Did some interesting stuff with Ray Palmer there. Not going to say it was the most original story I've ever read, but it was good. It was fun. Detective Comics, Earth 2, both of those were really good. Justice League 3000, really loving what they're doing on that book. Still would rather have a Legion of Superhero title, but that's just, you know, the traditionalist in me, I guess. There was also Loki Agents of Asgard, fun stuff. The first issue of the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man. Did you read that one?
That's next up. Can't wait.
I think they did some fun stuff, and it ended on a great story beat. I love it when an issue doesn't end on kind of like a chief cliffhanger or something like that, but leaves you with this is a good place to pause the story because I need time to think about this. So they're doing some fun stuff. And then we also got the second issue of Real Heroes from Hitch, which is essentially, you know, what if the cast of the Avengers were you know, galaxy quested into being the Avengers?
Yeah, we were kind of split on that. How'd that turn out? What do you think of number two?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I think the story is still moving a little slow. They've gotten not really kind of fully invested in are they going to fight or not. Mm. So it's got me thinking I should go rewatch Galaxy Quest to see how long it was before those characters really owned their roles and whatnot.
Did you get around to Moon Knight 3?
I did.
And?
That title is as schizophrenic as the character.
I think you called that, yeah.
We were back to Mr. Knight.
Yeah.
And I'm liking it. I just am not knowing what to expect of it. And then the way he went to fight the ghosts.
Yeah.
Really, I'm like, that was not something you could do in a live action TV show.
Yeah.
There is no way you could do that kind of an approach without almost having to have some wino or somebody just on the street witnessing the events burst out laughing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I really like the one and done nature of these, but it does seem like they seem really light, these stories, and it's not a lot of substance there.
But I think that balances, you can only do so much deep stuff in a done in one.
Yeah.
And I like how Moon Knight and Black Widow are doing the done in ones and moving forward. To a lesser degree, we're getting some of that with She-Hulk. And I really think shifting back to that kind of self-fulfilling, self-satisfying issue is the way to success these days.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I've been calling for that, so I like that. But I think a title like Magneto, which came out as well this week, is doing.
I haven't
read
that one yet, but yeah,
it's doing a much better job of these done in ones. The stories are much more compelling. They are self-contained, but part of a larger story. And it's working a little better, but and of course I still love Moon Knight. So
it's funny because done in one and part of the larger whole. I mean, to me, that's the way to go.
It's the way to go. Yeah.
An issue should end without needing the words to be continued or the end. We should be seeing a slice of the character's life, knowing that there is a greater whole and totality to it. And we should tune in next time or get the next issue, you know, whatever. To follow the further adventures and for it to seem like there is a clear timeline and lifespan for these characters. Whereas so often it's nope, thunk, this is done, that chapter is closed. We'll pick up again with the same character in an indescript time frame, either immediately adjacent, sometime later, who really needs to know? And to me that breaks the sense of reality of these characters. Not that they're real, I mean, come on, but still. It pushes the believability aspect way down. Speaking of which, Teen Titans Annual number 3. I'm assuming you did not pick up?
No.
This is one that really should have come out before issue 30. Because it literally had to have I know we just broke up the team, but there's this one thing. And it's like, come on. You know, it may have always been planned that way. It just felt a little, and another thing, kind of a tacked on to the series.
And I should mention that if you haven't read Batman Eternal number 5 yet, and you're worried about spoilers, don't read that until after Features End number 7, because they do refer to some things that may have happened in Features End number 7.
Really? I didn't notice that. Huh. It's getting with DC really hard to know when to read what.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a couple of issues. It's not a hardcore spoiler, but it's got some references to things that may be happening in 7.
Hmm. Well, hopefully it'll only be another few weeks before we get the final issue of Forever Evil. And is there anything that should be preventing me from reading the Superman Doomed either story or prelude issues? And if so, what order should I be reading them in? I've kind of lost track. I would appreciate some help. The other thing I've lost track of is I'm still putting up on the forum every week kind of my ratings for everything. But I'm sure a few of these titles have ended and I haven't properly notated them as such. So the number of titles I think I've added this year, I think, has grown quite a bit erroneously. But I just need to find some time to kind of clean up my bookkeeping.
Just making up numbers, aren't you?
Yeah. It's interesting going through and tracking this. I apologize, I forget who it was on the forum, but somebody was like, you know, what happened to all the 5 out of 5s type stuff? So I went through and I've reviewed just, or I've read this year, we've only talked about so many on the show, but like 836 or so issues, out of which I've given 6 5 out of 5s. I've never given that many just historically. To me, it's a sign of this is a damn near perfect issue. Those are few and far between. Other people feel differently. I know Mike Myers, who sometimes posts what he gets every week, he'll often have a dozen or 2 5 out of 5 books. Different standards, different tastes, that sort of a thing. That's awesome.
I think I'm somewhere in between you two. Mm-hmm. It's an okay, good, great 3 4 5 range for me. That's how I break it down. So great comics are a little more prevalent than perfect comics, I think.
I can see that, and I may be a little too strict and stuff. I mean, for me, it's both got to be just amazingly impressive and something that 6 months, a year from now, I can look at that and not be thinking, what on earth happened in that issue? I should be thinking, oh, yeah, that was a great issue. I loved that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the Astro City, Doctor Strange-ish Astro City that we read a little while ago, I think at the end of the year, I would say, yeah, that's a 5. That would probably be on a best of list or my end of year list or something.
That's one of the other ones I'm thinking I may bump up to a 5. The challenge that title has for me is I almost have to hold that to a little bit of a higher standard because it tends to be so good so often. But yeah, that's one that the more I think about it is just it was a phenomenal issue.
Yeah, while you're talking about the forum, I wanted to say thanks to Spidey Saves the Day. I'm not sure what his real name is, but that's his forum name. And he said he's had some really kind words to say about the Weekly Comic Spotlight and what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I thought that was really nice. You know, a few folks have said that. Mike Myers, I think, has mentioned it as well and said some nice kind words about it. Because you never really know, you know, how you're doing. And it's tough to follow. You know, you and Bob had been doing it for so long, so it was tough to follow that, big shoes to fill and all. And it's nice to hear positive feedback like that from the folks on the forum. And I thought that was really nice of him. He didn't have to say those things, and he did. So
no, I appreciated that, too. I mean, you've been doing this for a year now. This is the 52nd episode you've done. And, you know, on the one hand, it's, oh, how hard could it be? We're just going to review a couple of comics every week, you know, whatever. It takes a little bit of time. It takes a little bit of effort. It takes a little bit of knowledge. And sometimes it's not trivial to articulate what you're thinking. And I've really been enjoying these episodes we've been doing because you're coming at it often from a different angle. And I think we've got a good discussion going on here. And I hope the listeners are able to use these discussions to determine is some of the stuff that they weren't picking up stuff they should be, or getting them to rethink their opinions of what they have read. I mean, there's so many comics coming out. It's so hard to really know what's worth reading without getting other people's input.
Yeah, that's the best thing to hear is when you hear that, hey, I picked up this book because of your review, and I love it. It's one of my favorites now. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. Yeah, that really makes me feel. We really need to convince another 20,000 people or so to start reading Astro City.
Or convince a couple of more to read Critter. I mean, that one's doing...
Yeah.
It's not doing as well as I think it could be and should be. You know, it's, again, great book. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That was one of those I'm a little hesitant whenever somebody asks, what would you recommend? I know what I like. It takes a while for me to figure out what somebody else is going to like and to then correctly match the right property for that person. But man, when it clicks, when it pays off big. It's just awesome for somebody to find something that they really enjoy reading. And of course, that's part of why I enjoy doing the preview spotlight. As we record this, that goes up on Wednesday as this airs. It went up last Wednesday. And those episodes take quite a bit of time to do, but it's a lot of fun. And it's one where, again, I learn about a lot of new things. And sometimes what somebody knows about a title is just enough to influence me either onto a title I think I'll enjoy or off of one that just, you know, frankly, isn't right for me, so I can spend my money on somewhere that is right for me. And both of those are a win for everyone involved, I think. So, also, by the time this goes up, this week should be when the next round of solicits hit online. We had a little bit of discussion on this over on, I think it was the Preview Spotlight thread, in terms of just what the timeline is for when clips are due and all of that stuff. And it's one of those things that it's tough because I've got to counterbalance the need to get the episode up in time for people to use it for placing orders, with the needing to give people enough time to send in the clips. So just to talk about it here real quick, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it on the episode itself. Previews comes out usually the last Wednesday of every month. Clips are due 10 days later on not the first Saturday after previews, but the second Saturday that morning. And then the following Wednesday after that, 2 weeks after previews goes up, is when the episode goes up. Now, 2 weeks before previews comes out, which in a four-week month would be 2 weeks after the previous previews, and you can see where they start to overlap here, that's when the online solicits come out. So literally, it's one of those things where as soon as one episode is up, I'm starting to have to do some of the prep work of, okay, what am I going to do as comic book page picks of the month with DCBS to get some things at a little bit better discount and such, start reminding people, hey, previews is coming out, sending the clips, that kind of a deal. But again, we had great turnout this time around. It was about an hour and a half long episode. Great stuff. So I really appreciate everyone contributing to that.
And I think most of those clips came in Friday night.
All of them came in, with one person as the exception, within the 24 hours before they were due. I was the one exception. I was late, but I can be because I'm doing it.
You can be. Yeah, that's permissible.
If I were a listener, I would be right there with you guys. It would be a last minute kind of a thing for me too. I get it.
I keep telling myself what I should do is when the onlines are out, try to do it that way. It's just so, I don't know if I'm a creature of habit or it's so much more comfortable to sit with the previews open, mm-hmm. and do your clips that way. But I'd like to try it with the online clips, at least have them in ahead of time. I know I'd have dibs then on whatever I wanted. I'd be ahead of the game.
Well, and the big thing, even if you need a little more time to record the stuff, post on the forum. That way I know what I should be expecting and can kind of budget my time and know something's coming in. This was one of those months where nobody had posted anything on the thread. I mean, end of the school year, free comic book day, the Spider-Man movies. I mean, it's been a busy time. I get that. But not knowing am I going to get anything or not usually makes me a little antsy. And then, of course, over the weekend was the previous teleconference. Randy swung by this time, had a great chat with him. I had actually gotten to meet him for the first time face-to-face at C2E2. Longtime listener of the podcast. Always fun to talk with.
I listened to that. That was great. I wanted to ask him a follow-up question about Motor City Comic Con that he was talking about, and I thought, hey, if he's on the forum, I'll just shoot him a PM. Who is he on the forum?
He is, his handle on the forum, rzing20480_2000.
Yeah, I don't see him a lot on the forum.
He's not on the forum all that often. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to say we've got the most trafficked forum on the planet or whatever, and he's a busy guy. You know, he's really into collecting and stuff like that. Again, it was fun hanging out with him at C2E2, seeing some of the purchases he made and stuff.
Yeah, that was very cool to hear, you know that another listener's take on things. That was really cool. I like that. Yeah.
Well, and he's really into the Golden Age and the back issues and stuff like that, and different people have different tastes in what they like in comics and what about a convention interests them and stuff like that. And that's part of why I love having the forum and stuff like that, is getting different people's input and seeing just the bigger picture of comics. Because I can be myopic at times, no question about that.
Yeah, he had mentioned that Motor City Comic Con, which is this weekend, which by the time this goes up, it will have already happened. But I looked it up after he had mentioned it, and man, it's got a great artist alley. It's a nice little con, and it is only 4 hours from me. So I'm contemplating making a road trip if I can swing it. I would like to stay married though, so I'm not sure if I can swing it or not.
I'm single. I don't have that problem, but it's a little bit longer than 4 hours for me.
Yeah. It looks like a really cool little show. So I was going to check that out. And so it's cool when you hear stuff about like that. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Justice League United number 1 from DC, New Avengers number 18 from Marvel, and Star Trek New Visions number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.